We live in an era of outrage. Seems like everybody's upset about something these days. We see this most clearly in the foolish national drama that we call politics. I'm sure you watched or at least saw the highlights of the State of the Union address, and everybody upset about something. This side's outraged by what that side does, and that side is furious that this side won the election, and your side screams at the other side, and the other side yells back, and everybody is angry that nothing gets done in the meantime, which is politics in America in 2019. But that anger also spills over, it seems, into everyday life, right? People are just kind of upset these days. In fact, people have been getting angry long before the last election. Anger, in fact, goes all the way back to Cain. You remember Cain? Cain was so angry that he killed his brother Abel for a reason that nobody can really understand. Go reread that story, and it's not really clear why Cain was so upset. Maybe even Cain couldn't explain why he was so angry, and yet his anger turned to violence, and he took the life of his own brother. That's how anger works, isn't it? Rage builds up inside of us. A fire that's stoked by maybe you've been hurt or insulted or you're offended by something or some injustice that you see and you get upset about it, and that anger as it grows and bubbles finally boils over into angry words or violent actions. And maybe even looking back, you can't explain why you were so upset in the first place. Maybe you can't even understand why you acted the way that you did, but you did. And it's your fault. And God did hold Cain accountable for what he did. The fire of anger burns inside all of us. Maybe for you it's just a little ember. You can ignore it most of the time. Or maybe it's an inferno that you try to just cover up with a smiling face, but sooner or later you know it's going to boil over again. So we're going to talk today about overcoming anger. How God can help you put out that fire, extinguish that rage before it bursts out at the people around you, which it so often does. And that's the thing about anger. If you don't put it out, then it's going to lead to something worse, and you're going to end up hurting the people around you. Anger is your problem, and it's my problem. We all deal with this, but the truth is that the anger that we may feel on the inside eventually ends up hurting other people, and it becomes their problem as well. Now, we heard earlier in the service from Colossians chapter 3, and we're going to return to that passage in a few minutes to see how God can help us to overcome anger. But we're going to begin right now with a story from the Old Testament about uncontrolled anger. Uncontrolled anger. This story comes from 3,000 years ago. And even though it's an ancient story, I think it's very relevant to our lives today. And you may find in this story some things that reflect who you are or the people that you know who may deal with some issues with anger. It's a story about a man named Saul, who was the first king of Israel. Saul, unfortunately, was not a good person. He was not a good king. He was also not a good father, and we'll see that play into this story. But God decided, because of how Saul was acting, that he was going to take the kingdom away from Saul and give it to another young man named David. But now this story takes place in between. Saul is still on the throne, but David has been anointed to become the next king eventually, and so Saul is having trouble dealing with that. David's best friend is a man named Jonathan, who happens to be Saul's own son. And so you can see how these lives have been intertwined. And Saul understood God's plan. He knew that David and not Jonathan would get the throne after him. And so Saul was angry. He was angry at God. He was angry at David. He was even angry at his own son. And so on this occasion, Saul invites David to a feast at his palace, at his home. But David doesn't show up because David knows that Saul's upset with him. So we pick up the story in 1 Samuel chapter 20. It says, "The next day, the second day of the month, David's place was empty again. And then Saul said to his son Jonathan, 'Why hasn't the son of Jesse come to the meal, either yesterday or today?' And Jonathan answered, 'David earnestly asked me for permission to go to Bethlehem,'" David's hometown. "He said, 'Let me go, because our family is observing a sacrifice in the town. My brother has ordered me to be there. If I have found favor in your eyes, let me get away to see my brothers.' This is why he has not come to the king's table." Saul's anger flared up against Jonathan, and he said to him, "You son of a perverse and rebellious woman, don't I know that you have sided with the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of the mother who bore you? As long as the son of Jesse lives on this earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established. Now send someone to bring him to me, for he must die." "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" Jonathan asked his father. But Saul hurled his spear at him to kill him. And then Jonathan knew that his father intended to kill David. Jonathan got up from the table in fierce anger. On that second day of the feast, he did not eat because he was grieved at his father's shameful treatment of David. I imagine, at least I hope, you've never been so angry at someone that you threw a spear at them. But maybe you felt like it. Maybe the thoughts crossed your mind. I think it's easy for us to hold biblical stories like this one at kind of at arm's length. It's so long ago and ancient culture. We don't even have spears in our house, at least. But we think, you know, this story doesn't apply to our lives. But then maybe if you read this story a little more deeply and think about the relationships that are depicted here and the emotions that are being shown and the actions, as you bring this into our day, and you realize that there is something here that is kind of timeless. Sadly, it does speak to the realities of our own lives and maybe even our own families. You see, Saul was angry and he took out his anger on his own son. Today, we would call this domestic violence. Right? Did you know the Rockford police just put out these statistics? I was planning to say this, and then I saw a story that happened to pop up midweek. 35% of violent crime in Rockford in the last year is domestic related. In other words, violent crime perpetrated against someone that you live with. Family member, a friend, a roommate, 35% of violent crime happens inside of homes in Rockford. Nationally, domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women, more than any other cause of injury. 1 in 3 women, 1 in 4 men at some time in their life will be the victim of domestic violence. Again, someone that you know well hurting you, or hurting someone that you know well. And let me say this because it's important to say, if you or someone that you know is the victim of violence, whether it's from someone that you don't know or certainly if it's from someone in your own home, you need to call the police. You need to find shelter. You need to get help. You need to get away from that person who is hurting you. And while that's important to say, and I hope that we all hear it and understand it, our focus today is on the other side of the equation. Because you see, any of us could be on the other side as the one who causes the harm. Our focus today is how God can help us to overcome our anger. And all of us are capable of doing what Saul did. All of us feel anger from time to time, and any of us could allow that anger to boil over and then hurt the people around us. And so I want to start with a couple of observations about anger based on the story of Saul and Jonathan. And then we'll turn to Colossians chapter 3 that we heard earlier, and think about how God can help us to do something better, to find a better way to overcome our anger. But we first need to all understand this, that feeling anger is not sinful. All right, start with that. Feeling anger is not sinful, but when anger flares up, it often causes us to sin, and it certainly did for Saul. Anger is an emotion. It's not unlike happiness, sadness. It's an emotion. We feel it. It's natural for us to respond to the things that happen around us, and sometimes those things make us feel angry, and that's okay. It's not wrong to feel angry, but what you do with your anger makes all the difference. And we can see this in both Saul and his son Jonathan. You see, both of them in this story felt anger. And don't miss the fact that Jonathan also was angry. Both of them felt anger, but they dealt with it in very different ways. Saul was angry. He was angry that God was taking the throne away from him and his family line. God had rejected him because of the things that Saul had done. He wasn't a good king. He wasn't a good father. And he was upset about that. He was upset that David had been chosen to replace him on the throne instead of his son Jonathan. And that anger turned into violence. He took his anger out on his own son. He even cursed not only Jonathan, but he cursed his own wife who had bore Jonathan, Jonathan's own mother. He cursed. And then, in his anger, he threw a spear at his son. Fortunately, Jonathan was quick enough, or Saul's aim was bad enough, that no harm was done, but it was a violent action. And yet, in response to his anger, in response to Saul's anger, Jonathan also became angry, right? In fact, it says that Jonathan got up from the table in fierce anger. Jonathan was really, really angry, and we don't blame him for that. His father cursed him and threw a spear at him. Make me a little upset too. So what did Jonathan do with his anger? Did he curse back at his dad? Did he fight back? Did he pick up the spear and throw it back where it came from? No. Jonathan walked away from the confrontation. And then he turned his anger into positive action. If you keep reading the story, he leaves the table, doesn't finish the meal with his father, and then he goes and he warns David, "You better stay away, because now I know for sure that my dad's out to get you." You see, Saul was angry and he sinned in terrible ways as a result. Jonathan was also angry, but he didn't give in to it. We also learn this from Saul, that anger can simmer in your heart for a long time, maybe kind of hidden away there, but then it can also boil over into hatred, into violence, into cursing. Saul was upset with David for a long time, probably for years. You read these stories in 1 Samuel. For a long time, they're kind of in this in-between. Saul is still on the throne, but David is the heir apparent and about to take the throne. And Saul is jealous of him. He resents David's success and his fame. He hunts after him. He tries to kill him on multiple occasions. Saul let his anger simmer until finally it boiled over a number of different times, both at David and then at Jonathan, as well as others who got in his way as he tried to take out his anger on David. Saul was not able to control the anger that was in his heart. And it caused him to sin time after time. And that's how it goes for us too, right? Someone may hurt you. You feel slighted. Maybe you're a little upset, but then that grows into anger. That anger simmers, it spreads, it begins to fill your heart. And then when you can't contain it anymore, that anger becomes rage that turns into sinful actions. You lash out. You lash out at whoever happens to be in your way, even if whoever happens to be in your way isn't the one that you were upset with in the first place. And when anger boils over, it often produces hatred. And you begin to hate that person who has done whatever it was to you that made you upset. And as that hate grows, which itself is a sin, anger is sort of the seed. Hate becomes this plant that grows up in your heart, and that plant of hatred then produces fruit. And the fruit that it produces, on the one hand, might be violence like it was for Saul. It might be that you actually act out and hurt the people around you. Angry people often hurt others. Violence motivated by that anger is sinful. It's harmful. The other fruit that hatred produces is cursing. And I don't just mean by that profanity, which is ugly in its own way, but your anger may spill out in words that do damage to the people around you. Sticks and stones hurt, but so do words. And there are a lot of people, maybe everyone here has experienced being told, someone saying something to you that is hurtful. And you carry that with you. You might carry hurtful words with you longer than you carry the bruises or whatever you may receive from violent actions. No matter what caused your anger, no matter how righteous you might think your indignation is, when your anger boils over into hatred or violence or cursing, you are sinning. You are hurting people. You're hurting God. You might even be hurting yourself. And so the victims of your anger, whoever they are, they don't deserve to be hurt. And so those actions that are motivated by anger need to stop. So in response to all this, we do have good news today. And that good news is that God wants to help us overcome our anger. And so we need to turn again to Colossians chapter 3 that we heard earlier in the service. But let me just read parts of this again. Now you must rid yourselves of all such things as these: anger, rage, malice, slander, filthy language from your lips. Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Bear with each other, forgive one another. If any of you has a grievance against someone, forgive as the Lord forgave you. And over all these virtues, put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity. The Spirit is showing us ways that we can overcome our anger, ways that we can set it aside. And in some ways, the guidance that we see in this passage are simple or obvious or may go without saying, but I can assure you that it takes a strong person to overcome, to fight against the anger that we all feel in our hearts. So the first thing that we see here is that you can overcome anger by clothing yourself with Christ-like kindness. And I think the language there is interesting, to clothe yourself with these things that make us like Jesus. You see, becoming more like Jesus is like putting on clothes, because it isn't something that we just find inside of ourselves. What we find inside of ourselves all too often is the anger and the rage and the malice and the result of how we feel on the inside. And so instead, Jesus hands us His clothing, His way of living. And He asks us to put that on over our brokenness and our weakness and our anger. And so we learn from Jesus, and we take on His way of life. We take on His way of thinking and talking, His way of treating other people. When Jesus was insulted, He didn't curse back. When Jesus was wrongfully accused, He didn't seek revenge on those who were accusing Him. When Jesus was beaten, He didn't hit back. When Jesus was put on the cross, He stayed there because He went there for us. You see, Jesus treated people, even the nasty, angry people around him, and he dealt with a lot of people like that. He treated them with compassion, with gentleness, and with patience. And again, it takes a strong person to respond with compassion and kindness when someone is being angry and hurtful to you. Words like compassion and gentleness and patience, those are not just nice thoughts. They're not just good intentions. Those are action words. They're words that motivate us or call us to actually live the way we see Jesus having lived. Jesus gave of himself to care for others. He went into people's homes. He reached out to touch those who were in need. His compassion was not just feeling bad for people. His compassion was actually helping and making a difference in people's lives. And so if we're serious about following Jesus, then we need to clothe ourselves. We need to take on His clothing, His actions of compassion, His way of being kind and patient with others. And we need to put that on over our broken and sinful hearts so that Jesus' kindness can replace our anger. Another way that we overcome anger is that we forgive those who have hurt you. Forgiving others is the hardest thing that God asks us to do. It goes against every base instinct in human nature. When someone hurts us, we want to hurt them back. Or we at least want to hold a grudge against them and be angry with them and hold that over their heads for a long, long time. But instead of yelling back or hitting back or letting that anger fester in our hearts, you can choose to let it go. You can forgive. You can forgive as the Lord forgave you. In other words, God has forgiven you for all the things that you have done. Jesus died on the cross so that you could be forgiven. And we can forgive just as God forgives us. And finally, you can overcome anger by replacing it with love. Again, that may seem obvious, but certainly it's easier said than done. Self-giving, self-sacrificing love is the unifying virtue that makes us like Jesus. And as a follower of Jesus, that is our calling, to become like Him, not just to be glad that Jesus was like Jesus, but to say, I want to become like Him in how I think and how I treat other people and how I live my life. And the one thing that makes us like Jesus above and unifying all the other things that we see in Him is love, self-sacrificing love. And love is an action word. It's not just a feeling. It's treating others better than they deserve. It's seeking healing and restoration in a broken situation. Love casts out anger. It puts out that raging fire in our hearts. Love offers others the freedom from our anger, the freedom to live their lives apart from what we may otherwise have done to them. Love brings joy. Love brings blessing to the people around us. And that's how Jesus lived His life, and it's how He wants us to live our lives too. So let me pray for us. Father in heaven, we need Your help. It's so easy to be angry. It's so easy to see the bad things that happen, and many of them are bad things, and sometimes we are hurt and we feel angry, but Lord, it's so easy to let that anger grow in our hearts and then turn into things that hurt the people around us. And so, Father, forgive us. Forgive us for those times when we have let our anger boil over. We thank You for Your grace that offers a second chance and a way forward and a new life. And Lord, help us to overcome the anger in our hearts. Help us, Lord, to replace it with love and kindness and forgiveness. We ask this in Jesus' name.